From the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network, it's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, your host on the Michigan Talk Network, all over the Great Lakes State, all over the world at wildmichiganradio.com. You can pick up our podcast and check out our great sponsors like Lucky Buck Deer Mineral, lucky-buck.com. Time to get your Lucky Buck out right now. Just picked up a truckload last week. No joke. I did. You can see the pictures on our Facebook page, facebook.com/wildmichigan. But Lucky Buck getting ready to set up the dart and archery bows, the HHA. Single pin sights. Also, I want to welcome our new sponsor, Costa Sunglasses, to the mix as well. But we've got a lot of things going on. I want to thank one of our new affiliates, WIPV, up in Mackinac City, Michigan, because as my girlfriend Sarah Marie and I were taking a quick trip up north, up to the Upper Peninsula, scrolling through on a Saturday evening, scrolling through the radio dial, I heard this guy that sounded a lot like me, and lo and behold, it was. And Wild Michigan was airing up in Mackinac City, so thanks to each and every one of our affiliates, including WIPV, up in Mackinac City for carrying us. We are always on the watch for things here in the state, whether it be with Michigan DNR, with local agencies, or even national and worldwide agencies. And one of the things we watch closely is the antics of groups like PETA, or the Humane Society of the United States, or any of the other organizations that bill themselves as helping animals when actually they're helping themselves financially and through your pocketbooks. Humane Society of the United States, very, very good at that. And we are joined right now. We have Will Coggan with us, joining us, and we are going to speak about the Humane Society of the United States. Will, how are you today?
Great. How are you doing, Duran?
Doing well. You are with the Center for Consumer Freedom. Give me a little insight as to what the Center for Consumer Freedom does.
So our general mission is to support the right of adults to eat and drink what they want to. And so that takes on many forms. You know, for example, a couple years ago, the mayor of New York, Bloomberg, was trying to ban the sale of large soda out of restaurants and ball games. And so we got involved there and called him a nanny, you know, beat him up a little bit, and, you know, people got the joke. They kind of laughed off his proposal. And, you know, then you have other groups, too, like animal rights groups, PETA and HSUS, who are going around and they're attacking farmers and they're trying to raise the cost of food because they have an agenda. They don't want people eating meat or cheese or drinking milk or eating ice cream. They believe it's all animal cruelty. So you have a wide variety of activist groups that are trying to take away choices from Americans, and we're trying to protect those choices.
Speaking of Will Coggan here on Wild Michigan, Will, you know, don't we have something called the Constitution that it gives us the inalienable right to do things, to eat, to drink, to say what we want?
You know, Constitution, I certainly have heard of it a few times.
Well, you know, there's a few people in Washington, not to get too political, but to seem have thrown it out the window. But these organizations, again, like you said, have an agenda, and it really attacks the well-meaning, uneducated heartstrings of a lot of Americans, costing us out of pocket millions of dollars as they feed their coffers, line their wallets, and basically pay high salaries to CEOs like Wayne Pacelli of the HSUS.
Absolutely. I mean, and they're, you know, these groups, they sit around all day and they have nothing to do. They don't really produce anything besides propaganda. And so they've gotten very skilled at scaring Americans or misleading them into supporting their agenda in certain instances. You know, obviously with HSUS, they might come in with a ballot campaign, dump $1 million or $2 million and message on a couple of very tight points that are very misleading about the subject matter, and then they may or may not see success. But that's kind of their game plan with all these groups.
Will Coggan is our guest. He's the director of research for the Center for Consumer Freedom here. You can find them online at consumerfreedom.com. Will, what you have an organization like the HSUS, the Humane Society of the United States, that has zero animal shelters across the country. Zero. They're not funding any of these. So how can they call themselves the Humane Society of the United States?
Well, I guess that goes back to free speech. They can kind of call themselves what they want to. And certainly, you know, they can, but it's very misleading. It's to the point where you see Humane Societies at the local level, which have a very similar name to HSUS, changing their names to try to get away from this. You know, in Michigan, there was a group called, I think it was the Marquette County Humane Society in the Upper Peninsula. And a couple of years ago, they actually changed their name to the Upper Peninsula Animal Welfare Shelter. They got rid of Humane Society from their name. And, you know, we hear this all the time from local groups that there's confusion going on between local humane societies that do run pet shelters and that do a very good job in their local community of helping cats and dogs, not getting resources or hearing from people of, oh, I already gave to the Humane Society, and these people have given to HSUS and not directly to the local group.
So now there is a campaign to target the lies. I mean, there's always a campaign to target the lies, but there's a new push to really educate people more on what is going on with the HSUS.
Exactly. I mean, you know, if you tell Americans, just pick a guy off the street and you said, there's a group called the Humane Society of the United States, and, you know, based on what you know, if I told you just this one fact, you know, what's your opinion of them? And then that fact would be that only 1% of their budget is given to local pet shelters. Now, if you tell people that fact, the vast majority of them, 70%, have a negative view of HSUS. So that's really what we're trying to communicate, because it goes against the grain of people's assumption about HSUS. And granted, it's an assumption that through really no fault of their own. And you see people see these ads on TV that are full of cats and dogs that are produced by HSUS, or maybe they get something in the mail that's all about dogs. And they say, oh, well, it's called the Humane Society. I see a bunch of pets in their ads. Well, oh, of course they must run pet shelters, or of course they must be related to my local Humane Society. So once you take that away, then people start to realize, oh, wait a second, this is not what I thought it was. Actually, it's some different group in Washington, D.C. and Maryland that really doesn't do much for pets like I thought they did.
Speaking with Will Coggan here on Wild Michigan, our website, wildmichiganradio.com, brought to you in part by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral. And Will, they are really, 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 really anti-hunting. I mean, protecting cats and dogs, how does trying to infringe upon the rights of hunters to hunt a managed species like wolves, like bear, like mountain lion, things of that nature. How is that any of their business?
Well, they decided to make it their business. And, you know, all these donations they're taking in, this $100 million a year, has allowed them to hire many, many lawyers at their headquarters who sit around trying to gin up lawsuits all day, lawsuits such as trying to stop scientific wolf management. And so, you know, they've decided to make it their business because it's part of their broader agenda. As you mentioned, they're against hunting. They're simply against hunting, and they want to stop it. I mean, if you look at Michigan and the growth of the wolf population over time, you know, HSUS is trying to stop any kind of hunting management of the wolf population, and also in Minnesota and in Wisconsin as well. And you just want to ask these guys, okay, so if you don't think the population is good enough today, well, what about in 5 years if it doubles again? Would that be enough for you? And of course it wouldn't. They're going to keep suing to stop hunting as a tool.
No, I think, too, also, speaking with Will Coggan here, I think what they do is they find the easiest thing to tug at the heartstrings of the unknowing. Look, wolves are mythical. You can see a three wolf moon t-shirt at the Walmart, and all of a sudden they have a magical power to them. And this, honestly, it really does tug on the heartstrings of people, and they don't know, especially people in these bigger metropolis areas, like we saw here in Detroit, when it came to the management, the vote, where the vote to protect the wolves came from. People that don't get outside of the city, that have no clue about what we do. And Will, if you don't mind hanging on, we're going to speak more with you here briefly.
Okay,
we're going to speak more. I know I'm getting on my soapbox. Sorry. Will Coggan, Center for Consumer Freedom, joining us here on Wild Michigan, protecting your hunting rights and educating you on the Michigan Talk Network.
You
can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan.
Turn the quiet up, turn the noise down, let this old world just spin around.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I am Duran Martinez, Alex Clark in the studios of the Michigan Talk Network, brought to you in part by Darton Archery, celebrating 65 years in Michigan as one of the leading innovators in archery products. Great crossbows, great compound bows, and you can see them all at our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Go to our sponsors page and you'll find a link to Darton Archery there. Speaking with Will Coggan, the Center for Consumer Freedom, keeping you helping us stay free when you have people like Michael Bloomberg that say, you know what, you don't need that large soda. I'm going to come in and I'm going to be your nanny. I'm going to watch over everything you do. Give me you're tired, you're oppressed, you're overweight, and I will make sure that you can't have a big soda. That's, you know, and we appreciate you keeping tabs on these things, Will, because we have so much going on in our busy daily lives already, and the internet is so full of misinformation. And then we have around election time, or when a bill comes on the TV, you have both sides coming on. Back in 2006, we had Proposal 3, which in Michigan, we had a three-year test season to hunt doves in Michigan. The Humane Society of the United States comes in, throws all of this propaganda about nobody hunts doves when, you know what? There's probably only five states in the country that don't have a dove season, and they come in, spent millions of dollars, and we now do not have a dove season because they, although they are the largest game bird, largest quantities of game bird in North America, nobody hunts them. So that is a battle we lost, and we really kind of really, you know, took it in the end with that. And we have you to help us, you know, get educated with that, and we appreciate it.
Thank you.
And now, you know, we had the wolf issue. We had Jill Fritz, who was on this show with
really?
Keep Michigan Wolves Protected. And she kind of let it slip that she was the head of the Michigan chapter of the Humane Society of the United States. Well, guess what? We kind of pointed out to the world who they were. And again, you've been doing that for a while. And Humane Society of the United States, really, really an anti-hunting organization that is taking money hand over fist and not helping anything.
Yeah. I mean, they're really helping themselves at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
They have their agenda. It's very similar to PETA's agenda. And that's something we like to point out to people as much as possible. You know, not just, you know, on the one hand, you get people's attention by saying, hey, this group doesn't run any pet shelters. You say, people then say, okay, well, where does the money go? And we say, well, let me tell you, you ever heard of PETA? And most people have, and a lot of people have a very negative view of PETA and say, look, these guys are just like PETA, but they are much slicker.
No, they are. And on your website, you know, there is a link to PETA kills animals, 33,000 animals since 1998. I'm sure the number is still growing, that PETA has killed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when people find out about that, they're shocked. I mean, here's an organization that says, yeah, we're for the ethical treatment of animals, but by the way, we're going to kill 80 to 90% of the cats and dogs we take in.
Sure. And now they have tried to forge an agenda to put vegan choices on the menu at Domino's. Domino's, a Michigan company, has pushed back and said no. And people need to realize who's fighting back, who's not just folding to the PETA machine or the HSUS machine, that they're actually standing up to these people as well.
Oh, absolutely. I think the vote count on this shareholder resolution that PETA put in about, you know, vegan pizzas, I think it got less than 1% of the shareholder vote.
I want to know who that less than 1% was. But you have corporately, you know, you have publicly owned companies, and when, you know, and I don't know if somebody from PETA would actually had enough money to buy into that, you know, to force this, but money buys a lot of votes and it buys a lot of misinformation. And again, this is what you guys are doing. Who else are you working with? You know, aside from PETA kills animals, who are you bringing this good information to the public with?
So our other main vehicle is humanewatch.org, and that's just dealing with HSUS. And obviously, PETAKillsAnimals.com is dealing with PETA. So Humane Watch is our major campaign educating the public about HSUS, and you know, we do that in a variety of ways. We communicate to lawmakers directly. We communicate a lot to the public in as many different forms as we can. We do a lot of online advertising on Facebook and YouTube. We produce videos that go on YouTube, and you know, right now we're running an ad nationally about HSUS, and we do a lot of print ads and a little bit of direct mail as well.
Now, how are you guys funded? Because, I mean, we know how they're funded, but how are you guys receiving your funding?
Well, generally speaking, we're funded by the food and restaurant industry. But for obvious reasons, we don't go into individual donors just because they're going to be HSUS and PETA targets, among others. Yeah.
Now, when you mentioned specifically, I mean, I'll guarantee that they monitor this show, and I'm waiting for one of them to get the sand up to actually want to be on this show. We have had one other person from PETA on the show. Years ago, we had a gentleman on, and his name was Andrew. And I asked him, I said, it was from Northern Illinois, comes from a very hunting, fishing-oriented family. And I asked him, I said, well, what changed your mind? He goes, well, you know, I was going to college and I met this girl. I'm like, okay. There it went. Yep. Everything went out the window at that point in time. So there seems to be a lot of indoctrination going on outside of these organizations as well.
Well, you know, it's interesting to see that both PETA and HSUS, and I'm sure many other groups do, many other activist groups in other areas, have campaigns targeting kids. PETA's is especially notorious and infamous because they've been showing kids graphic images, you know, bloody images, violent images, to try to get them to, you know, go vegan, essentially. And HSUS has a much softer campaign, but they're still targeting kids. They have a newsletter called Kind News. So, again, they're trying to build their brand up with the next generation of people so that when these kids go to college, they're already prepared, and when they get out of college, they're already prepared to, you know, view HSUS as a good brand and to be open to these messages that HSUS and PETA are pushing.
All right. Again, we're speaking with Will Coggin here on Wild Michigan. And, of course, Will is with the Center for Consumer Freedom. The website, consumerfreedom.com. You guys, this is a constant battle for you. What was your next biggest battle that you're facing?
Well, honestly, HSUS is the big battle for the long haul because, like I said, you know, PETA is pretty honest about what they want. And because of that, and because of all the street theater that they do, people tend to have a more negative impression of PETA. And they also know what PETA is about because PETA says it right on their website. HSUS is a much more invasive organization. You know, they are very deceptive about how they market themselves and what their real goal is. And so because of that, and because HSUS spends $40 or $50 million a year on marketing itself as this pet-friendly group, you know, that's kind of the big dog, so to speak, for the next few years.
No, it's an uphill battle too with these guys. I mean, every time, again, they see what they deem an easy target, they're going after it. And fortunately, groups like Safari Club International, who are very lawyer heavy as well, not only for hunters' rights, but you know, protecting us, National Rifle Association, all of these. And now we can thank the Center for Consumer Freedom, Will Coggin. Appreciate you joining us.
Thanks, Trent.
Oh, absolutely. Keep up the good work, sir. All right, Will Coggin joining us. More coming your way. It's Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network, wildmichiganradio.com. Check us out online.
Hey, this is Mark Zona from Zona's Awesome Fishing Show, and you're listening to my guy, Duran Martinez, on Wild Michigan.
I'm on a first-name basis at the tackle shop. I got a charge account running up nonstop. They ought to give me my own parking spot. I can't fit another plug in my tackle box.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I am Duran Martinez, your host on the Michigan Talk Network. So many things going on. You can find out at wildmichiganradio.com. That is a link to our website. You can check out our great sponsors on there like HHA Sports, makers of the best single pin 7 archery sites in the country. Not voted on by me, but by the public and magazines galore, man. These guys are tops, and we're happy to be having them on board here with us. Also, Costa Sunglasses, our new sponsor here on Wild Michigan. So excited about, really getting involved. We know they're big, big down south, big in Florida and on the coastal regions, but we do a lot of fishing here in Michigan. We are number one for licenses and boats, so give us that, will you please? And again, thanks to Costa for joining us. Lance Valentine, Walleye 101. The walleye run usually happens about now. The Detroit River, we would think, is firing up. But Lance, it's been very cold. It's been very windy. So really, let's get your take. You were out on Thursday. How did that go?
We fished a little bit on Tuesday. We fished Tuesday morning, and it was tough going. Canceled charters for Tuesday night and all day Wednesday due to high winds and dirty water. Got down here Thursday morning, and water had cleared up a little bit, but it was cold, never got above 37 degrees. Wind was blowing. We picked away at a four-man limit Thursday morning, but it was really, really, really tough. So, we had a good first couple weeks, a lot of big fish, and there's still some good numbers of big fish in the river. Just this change of weather. From Tuesday morning to Thursday morning, we had almost a 10-degree drop in water temperature. So that, along with the spawning activity and things going on, really made for a tough bite late this week.
That does make for a tough, because we know the 50-degree mark is like the magical water temperature for walleye. But when you have the air temp and the wind mixing things up, bringing that water temp down, are fish getting slow to the bite as well as slow moving, or are they just slow to the bite?
They're just slow to the bite. They're off a little bit. The fish that are pre-spawn are real close to spawning. They're really not on. The fish that just got done spawning, they're really not back to feeding again. You add in a couple cold fronts, you add in a drop of water temperature, and it's just been a lot of work the last couple of days. The bite is just tough for catching most of our fish on stinger hooks, and basically what you're doing is you're just kind of lifting the jig off the bottom nice and slow, and you just go to lift it, the rod tip kind of loads up. There really is no bite. It's just kind of pressure on the rod as you go to lift, and you set the hook, and about 50% of the fish you got hooked in the nose with the stinger hook, and about 50% you get 3 or 4 cranks off the bottom, and they're gone. So the last couple of days has been kind of tough. So we're hoping we get some stable weather, get warmed up a little bit, and get back on the bite.
Lance Valentine from walleye101.com is our guest here. Lance, the importance of stinger hooks, I know it, but maybe somebody new to walleye fishing in general may not know what we're talking about. Somebody that wants to get down the Detroit River, look, there's a million boats out there, but let's get the information now.
Right. Yeah. Basically, this is a stinger hook is a usually a 3 to 4, 3.5 inch piece of line that attaches. We attach ours to our jig hook with a slip knot on our Walleye 101 Signature Series stinger hooks, and then a small treble hook. A lot of guys use size 8, so we use a real small. We use actually a size 10 super sharp round Bangamagatsu hook. They're nice and sticky sharp. Guys will use up to a size 6. That's a little too big in my mind. So size 8, size 10, and basically what it does, it hangs at the back of your presentation. So the back of your plastic worm, the back of your plastic shad body, whatever you're using for a body. And what it does is, as the fish kind of pick up the tail when they're really not biting heavy on the jig, you get those extra bites. One of the keys for us, the way we always fish, and I think one of the keys the last couple of days, and we've caught a lot more fish than most of the guys we've talked to, is we let our stinger hook hang. We don't hook it into our body. So we basically let it hang there. So basically the lightest part of the presentation is that little stinger hook. So if a fish makes any movement at all to suck in anything, he doesn't have to move the jig or the worm. You can still get that stinger hook in his mouth. And like I said, about 50% of the fish, actually 100% of the fish we've been catching the last couple of days have been on the stinger hook, and we're still only getting about 50% of our bites. So having that stinger hook kind of flop back there and be free and be the lightest part of the presentation has been a big deal in how many fish we've caught the last couple of days when the bite's been tough.
Lance Valentine from Walleye 101 is our guest here on Wild Michigan. Our website, where you can pick up any of our podcasts or find out where we're broadcasting, is at wildmichiganradio.com. Lance, with the muddy water, the conditions, the wind kicking everything around, I know presentation color is a big thing with walleye. And I know it's because of you, it's whatever the fish are biting, that there may be a starting point for color, though.
Yeah, you know, I fish a lot of chartreuse, a lot of fire tiger, which is chartreuse, green, and orange. Those are kind of, I would bet you that 90% of the stuff I have in the water is those two colors, jig heads. And then we play around with the body, right? Brown worms, black worms. Last couple of days, the black worm has been really, really good for whatever reason. You know, brown worms, we have a worm that we call camo. That's kind of a green pumpkin with some red fleck in it. That's really, really good at certain times. So usually I have four customers in the boat, myself. That's five rods in the water. Usually we start you know, two or three worms of each one different color, one or two shad bodies, different colors, and then maybe something else. We've had really good luck this year on a green pumpkin disc worm. The little chartreuse curl tail has been really good this year for whatever reason. So we'll start with five different presentations, maybe three or four different shapes and a couple different colors. And then as we start to key in on getting fish on one thing or the other, we start to switch over. So the last couple of days on this really, really cold water, we've been on chartreuse jigs and black worms have been by far the best presentation. So we're kind of stuck on that right now. So I'm starting with three of those every trip and then two others, and we're just kind of adjusting from there. But last couple of days, like I said, chartreuse or fire tiger jigs with black worms have definitely been the key for us.
Lance Valentine from walleye101.com joining us here on Wild Michigan. We've been working with Lance for going on 9 years now here on the show. One of the things I've always learned about the Detroit River, Lance, was the heft behind your jig head. 1 ounce, 3/4 ounce, good for the river, especially with these windy conditions, trying to stay vertical.
Yeah, you know, and what's really cool is, you know, I use a 3/4 ounce to control the boat, and everybody else uses a 1 ounce. And I get some really good fishermen in my boat, guys who could, you know, fish lighter jigs and stay on the bottom. But last week, especially when we were catching big fish, there was a huge difference between the amount of fish caught on a 1 ounce jig as there was even to a 3/4 ounce jig. So with more being caught on that big jig, there's something lots of days about the way a big jig falls as opposed to a small jig that attracts the fish. So it's not just the ability to feel the bottom. There's something about the way that big jig falls. So even though you can fish a lighter jig, don't hesitate some days to try a heavier jig because it's a whole different presentation. A half-ounce jig falling to the bottom falls a whole lot different than a 1 ounce jig does. And some days, one of those two is going to be better. And we have definitely seen, I work with five other charter captains, so talk to a lot of guys every day. So basically we've got, you know, 30 lines in the water every trip. And there has been a huge, we've seen a lot of results where the 1 ounce jig are catching a lot more fish and a lot more big fish than even the guys who are the guides who are down here all the time and probably are the best fishermen in the boat every time. With a lighter jig, our customers are catching more fish and bigger fish on the heavier jig. So there's something about that 1 ounce jig some days that really attracts fish. Don't know what it is, but I definitely wouldn't hesitate to make sure one or two guys in the boat has one on all the time.
Don't know what it is and really don't care at this point.
I just know it works, brother.
You know, I don't really care, you know, what it is. And it just seems to be working. And when you have paying customers, you have to go that route.
That's right.
You know,
you do what you do to have a good time, right? And make sure these guys catch fish. And, you know, it started as staying vertical. Now we're seeing it even with good fishermen, even with guys who could fish 3/8 or 1/2 ounce and stay vertical, we're catching more fish with 1 ounce. 3/4 ounce and 1 ounce jigs. I don't know why that is. It has to do with something, the way the jig falls, the way it hits the bottom, the way it attracts the fish. Maybe the bigger head is easier to see. Don't know. But I just know that you'd have a hard time getting me off 3/4 ounce and 1 ounce jigs.
All right. You're speaking with Lance Valentine from Walleye 101 right now. Stay on the line, Lance. We're going to talk a little bit about location, 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 and how misery loves company. That's one of my favorite Lance Valentine terms. Joining us right now, it is Lance Valentine. You're listening to us all over the world at wildmichiganradio.com via our podcast. Thanks to HHA Sports and the Michigan Talk Network.
This is Owen O'Hagan of ClareVirtually.ie inviting you to fish County Clare, Ireland. Now back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan, less than 2 weeks away from the trip to County Clare. Wild Michigan taking the show overseas with Owen O'Hagan and Rory Costello, world champion fly caster. My gosh, the distance this man is getting with a fly is absolutely amazing. We are being flown over by the good folks of County Clare, and we're going to be visiting. We're going to be fly fishing for pike and for brown trout on Loch Derg. And if you'd like to see Ireland for yourself, please go to clarevirtually.ie, and you can see what you know, you might be able to enjoy on a very low cost as well. This is going to be a very big trip that we're looking forward to. And Sunday, this coming weekend, we're going to be, and you know, you could be listening to us right now. We're on the Detroit River. Lance Valentine joining us right now, talking about the Detroit River from walleye101.com. Lance, let's talk about location, location, location. We know when, you know, when the guys aren't catching fish, for some reason they cluster. They like to just hang out together and just be miserable together.
Bad fishermen don't like to fish alone.
No, right? Never, never. And what was funny, we had Brian Brosdahl on a couple of weeks ago. We were speaking with Bro, and he was talking about his experience in Detroit fishing the river for walleye. He says, you know, there's this one spot, and I didn't have things on my line for more than a second. I'm like, Trenton Channel. I said, by the way, Lance Valentine says, just take your tackle box and throw it over the edge.
Just dump it in and call it good, right? So, yeah, we've been fishing the middle part of the river like we traditionally do, you know, around Wyandotte, E-Course, up to the Army Corps of Engineers. And what we've seen this week with the weather change, we've seen the fish kind of move to the bottoms of the channels, right? So we're fishing a lot of 32, 34, 36, 38, 40 feet of water. With the bite being off, the fish have a tendency to slide out of the shallow water, and again, we're catching a lot of fish in that deep water. What we're doing right now is we're targeting, you know, our best option right now. The places where the big females show up are just empty. There's no fish there at all. So we're targeting these, you know, 2 to 5 pound males that are in the river, and they're pretty plentiful. But with the way the weather has changed and the drop in temperature and the bite just kind of being off. As soon as that happens, you know, I start to run to some of the deeper water. The channel at Fighting Island is a good spot. The Mud Island channel is a good spot. The deep water north of Mud Island out in front of the Great Lakes Steel Mill, and, you know, 34 to 38 feet of water is one of my favorite spots when the bite gets tough. So we're just spending a lot of time not running around the river at all, just kind of going to one or two spots. And what I call grind fishing, right? You know you're only going to get 10 or 15 bites. And it doesn't matter where you move to, you're not going to get any more bites. You might as well just sit your butt down in one spot where you know there's a lot of fish and just fish, 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 fish. And that's what we've been doing the last couple of days is, you know, again, I call it grind fishing. And I would tell the guys that, you know, the weather still isn't great this weekend and the bite isn't back on yet. You know, so if you get in a spot and you catch one or two, don't go, oh, we only caught two. Let's go somewhere where you can catch six. So there probably is not a spot you're going to catch six. So you need to sit in that spot, just keep making that same drift over and over and over again. And pick one here and maybe get through the next pass and none the next pass and one the next pass. The next, you know, over the course of 5-6 hour a day, you know, you got 15, 18, 20 fish in the box. So right now, patience is the key, and just kind of grinding in the deep water has been the key for us and having good catches on our charters.
Lance Valentine from Walleye 101 talking with us here on Wild Michigan. Lance, I want to talk about something I don't think we've really covered it. Let's put this into perspective of a new angler or somebody that's going with some experienced anglers down there. Let's talk about apparel. Because this is something, you know what, you don't think about this. You know, look, I've got a Frabel suit. I love it. But I've kind of put back a few pounds that I lost. Probably not going to fit so well. So how goofy am I going to look in my waders and my heavy jacket?
Actually, you're not going to look too goofy at all. They like today, it actually looked pretty good. I'm sure there's guys who want to buy your waders and your heavy jacket from you. I tell people when I send an information on the charters, I tell them on the Detroit River, dress like you were going ice fishing. You know, I see so many guys, you know, you say, you know, bring a rain jacket, and they show up with the stuff they pull out of their golf bag and go, what are you going to do with that, right? Or, you know, the biggest one I get is wool socks and tennis shoes. You know, and I asked a guy the other day, he showed up like that, and I said, do you know how an air conditioner works? And he kind of looked at me, and I goes, look, an air conditioner works by sending air across cooled liquid. As we're fishing in the middle of a giant air conditioner. The water temperature is 42 degrees, the wind's blowing 20. It's going to be cold, right? That's just going to happen. So I'm a Long John guy, pair of fleece pants, my Cabela's guide wear, and then 3 or 4 layers of fleece on the top, a nice gill outer jacket to cut the wind and maybe grab some of the rain. I four, five, six layers. You know, you need to dress like you're ice fishing because that river is cold. You get any wind blowing across 45 degree water, especially the big expanses of the river, it can get cold. And the biggest thing that guys have a problem with is they don't dress properly, right? They're at home, man, it's kind of hot at 65 degrees at home. Well, it's going to be about 20 degrees colder than that on the water. So you can always take it off, but you can never add more if you don't have it. So come like you're going to go ice fishing. Be prepared for that. Gloves, hats, good socks, boots, good outer rain gear, even if it's not raining, to cut the wind. You know, a good quality pair of rain gear is unbeatable. So come dressed like you're going to go ice fishing. You can always take it off and put it away.
And if you see me this coming weekend at the Wyandotte, if you happen to be listening and you're looking at me at the same time, I'm wearing waders. Don't freak because I'm staying warm.
There you go.
That's no joke. It was kind of like me asking, but I wanted to make sure I wasn't going to look like some goofball, but I'm probably going to wear my waders anyway.
You're not going to look any more like a goofball than normal.
And this is why we have friends. The one thing that why we bring Lance on is because he is a charter boat captain and he has classes that teach about walleye fishing. There's so many intricacies of walleye fishing. And when I go back to apparel, it's nice to be able to layer and stay warm and then just get warm enough as the day progresses, as the temperatures go up, because freezing, there's nothing worse than freezing, being wet, cold, and miserable.
Yeah, you know, I've been down here since Good Friday, and I have yet to go. Man, I overdressed. It's one of my biggest issues probably with my customers is because when you're shaking and you're jigging sideways because you can't get warm, you're really not jigging properly. So it's probably the biggest thing I have with my customers is they don't understand how cold it's really going to be. And when you're cold and miserable, you're cold and miserable, right? And it's just no fun for anybody. And I feel bad if they're cold and miserable, but, you know, I told them not to be cold and miserable.
Well, so
bring your clothes, guys. Just dress warm.
No, absolutely. And Sarah Marie's going to be on the boat with us for the first time this weekend as well. And we're looking forward to seeing her catch her first walleye on the Detroit River. It's going to be a fun experience. Look, there's no casting going on. The big gloves are okay. You're not going to look ridiculous. You're going to be warm, plain and simple.
Yes, stay warm. You can't enjoy this unless you're warm.
No, exactly. Lance Valentine is our guest here on Wild Michigan. Now, what is going on for the rest of the season? What do you have coming up as we progress throughout this bite? Because it's this magical time that usually lasts about the end of May, but then we have like the silver bass coming in.
Yeah, I'm here till right after Mother's Day. I leave here the Wednesday after Mother's Day. Then I go to Saginaw Bay, and we start guiding on Saginaw Bay for the summer. And then our four-day fishing education weekends kick in. We've got one on Saginaw Bay, one at Burt Lake, one up at Sault Ste. Marie, one in Green Bay, then our fall trip in Huron. So we got those coming up this year. My summer will be spent on Saginaw Bay. We got lots of trips booked out of Lima Beach Marina on the trolling bite for Saginaw Bay. And Saginaw Bay is getting better and better every year. You know, last year we probably averaged 3 to 3.25 pound fish. This year that average is probably going to be, probably close to 4 pounds, which doesn't sound like a big fish when you're down here catching 12-pounders, but for Saginaw Bay, Saginaw Bay is making a huge comeback. Lots and lots of 3, 4, 5 pound fish this year. So, we'll leave here the way I do a morning trip the Wednesday after Mother's Day, and then I start guiding the next day on Saginaw Bay the Thursday after Mother's Day. So, we hit this Detroit River fishing prime time, and then we kind of hit the prime, late spring, early summer bite on Saginaw Bay. And then we kind of put it away for August and September, play a little golf, and then we get back to Lake Erie in October, November, and hit the prime early fall, mid-fall, late-fall bite on Lake Erie. So we're following the fish. We go to where the bite is the best. We think that's the best way for our customers to get them on the right bite. And it's three different types of fishing, right? It's jigging on the Detroit River. It's trolling open water for smaller fish and lots of numbers on Saginaw Bay. And in the fall time in Lake Erie, it's fishing for big fish. So we get three different fisheries over the course of the year, and it really turns out to be a great year and really a really good way to make a living.
All right, Lance Valentine, walleye101.com. You can find out more about the fishing education classes, maybe book a charter. And as always, man, I appreciate you joining us here on the show.
All right, bye. Have a good time this weekend.
Oh, most definitely. You'll see me in Detroit. I'll be the guy in the duck hunting gear out on the boat, not caring because I'll be warm. Appreciate everybody joining us. Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network, brought to you in part by Darton Archery, HHA Sports. Lucky Buck. Deer Mineral. Time now to get your Lucky Buck out and now Costa Sunglasses.